Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest?
Oh, I see.
They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons and Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
And I am Mary.
And Mary, we are discussing some fun lore this week, as we do every week.
I love lore.
I mean, it's kind of the whole reason why we're here.
What's it really is.
Fun about this lore is, aside from a few references here and there, I haven't ever really dug into the lore that we, the topic that we are going to discuss. And so this was all kind of new to me. So it was a lot of fun.
Ooh, how fun.
Oh, it's a blast. What's wrong with us?
I don't know, a lot of stuff. Where do you want me to start? Like,
that's for another podcast. What is wrong with Mary and Sergio?
How much time do you got?
it's gonna be one of those like Critical Role, like 4 hour per episode.
Oh yeah. Podcasts. Oh yeah, that's the special edition there.
So this week we are discussing the Red Knight. The Red Knight, also known as the Lady of Strategy, also known as the Grand Master of the Lanceboard, which is another name for like a chessboard, is the lawful neutral deity of strategy and planning.
Ooh, okay. I'm already on board.
Oh yeah.
I mean, this deity in my life. I am terrible at planning.
I mean, it's more so like in warfare, but I don't see why you couldn't take the lessons learned on the battlefield and apply them to everyday life.
I mean, I've been in a school zone a couple times, and if that's not an actual battleground, I don't know what is.
Right, exactly. The dream pickup, yeah, that's wild.
Oh, gosh. Ugh, it's the worst.
So her holy symbol is a red knight chess piece, the little horsey guy with stars for eyes.
Ooh.
And the Red Knight serves Tempest, who is the Lord of War, the God of War, as the goddess of planning and strategy, and is usually portrayed as a dark-haired woman in blood-red armor with a map of the realms, the Forgotten Realms, tightly clasped in her hands.
I'm already in love.
I mean, she sounds pretty awesome. She sounds like a total badass. And I mean, the fact that she's like many warriors and obviously like, you know, military commanders, you know, revere her, venerate her, just adds to her appeal.
Absolutely.
The Red Knight keeps her true name secret from everyone but the Lord of Battles, from Tempest, as she realizes that if any power, mortal or divine, were to gain any measure of control over her, they would be privy to all the plots, all the stratagems, of rulers throughout the realms and the powers throughout the multiverse. So keeping that close, you know, the Red Knight, like I said, is venerated by warriors, including the Foe Hammer's followers, pretty much into a secondary position to the Lord of Battle. So it's you got Tempest, and if you worship Tempest, usually close behind you're worshiping, or at least, you know, exalting the Red Knight.
Right. Honoring her as well.
Foehammer is just another nickname for Tempest, not to be confused with Glaurin Foehammer, the shield dwarf smith from the Storm King's Thunder adventure. I saw that and I'm like, Foehammer, what does he have to do with this?
But that's a different, yeah.
Two different Foehammers.
Two different foes, two different hammers.
All together. It's only since the Time of Troubles that a small priesthood distinct from that of Tempest, of the Foehammer, have arisen in her name. And this small priesthood, owing its existence in part to the increasingly complex nature of war, is grudgingly tolerated by Temperans, by worshippers of Tempest, but apparently encouraged by the Lord of Battles himself, which is weird. It's like, it's kind of like if you work for a guy and they have a protege, and then a protege goes and does their own thing, and your boss is like, that's awesome, I'm so proud of them, and you're kind of like, I don't like that at all, I guess that's cool, like why are you so bent out of shape about
what
that?
Your God likes it,
like, right? So cool with if it. Your God likes it, then you should love it, I feel. But some sages speculate that Tempest has sponsored the Red Knight to the rank of demi-power and encouraged her worship as a natural counterbalance to Garagos the Reaver, who is his mortal enemy. And it just kind of makes sense. I mean, they're not, you know, completely, they're not the exact same god. You know, obviously they don't have the exact same portfolio, but they're very similar. And so you would think if you had someone, especially who you're aligned with as a god, if you have someone who is very similar and also being worshipped, that, you know, you kind of get some residual worship and power from that, right?
There's going to be a little bleed over.
Right, exactly. So it just, it makes sense. It's like that. I like that a lot. So the Lady of Strategy is calm and logical in demeanor, but displays great wealth of compassion. And I love this. Though she is unafraid to send her worshipers to their deaths when necessary to secure the objective of a plan. It's like,
there's going to be collateral damage, and she has no problem with that. But I feel like if you're worshiping her, you're probably going into that knowing that.
Yeah, you're in it.
That you could be sacrificed for the cause, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Right, exactly. Like, and I love that it doesn't, if you read the sentence, you're like, wait, what, she like is calm and logical, but then also has compassion, but then like we'll send her worshipers to her death. That doesn't make any sense. Like, it all kind of does make sense. Like, logical, like, okay, well, I need to kill these people need to die in order to
these
secure
people are
the
going
objective.
To die, but this other stuff down the road is going to be taken care of due to this.
So it does make a lot of sense, and I appreciate that.
I do too. Yeah, it's nice to see a god of logic.
The Red Knight and her followers believe that war is won by those with the best planning, the best strategy, the best tactics, regardless of the apparent odds.
Okay.
You know, because any fool can snatch defeat from the jaws of victory with fortune's aid. Only a master strategist can ensure a lasting victory.
Okay.
In addition to that, she implores her worshipers, her followers, her devotees, to seek out an opponent's weaknesses while also recognizing their own, and then conversely avoiding their opponent's strengths, and then playing to your own. I just, again, very logical stuff, right?
I'm here for it. I'm not seeing any downsides, and that scares me, because there's always a downside.
I mean, this, like, spoiler alert, like, she stays pretty awesome throughout. Like, the Red Knight just seems like an overall pretty cool neutral deity that's all about fighting and being logical. It's like, okay, I got
maybe. Maybe that's why there's only whispers and casual mentions here and there, then.
For sure, yeah. Like, there's no zazz to it, you know? It's just kind of like very, very like working class sort of like
just yeah it's to kind of
do what has to be done
ones I suppose yeah yeah
I like but it. I love and I found this in the research this description of her. It says that mm-hmm. she rarely raises her voice and is said to love a good joke and have a throaty laugh. I don't know that I've ever seen or read where a deity mm-hmm. where they mm-hmm. the lore describes their laugh, like makes it a point to describe their laugh.
Oh gosh, must be like one of those big booming ones that you know who that is. Oh, so that's so
like you, yeah, you hear it across that's the tavern, be the red and you're knight. Like, oh my, is that the Red Knight?
I heard your laugh from clear across the room.
She dislikes flighty behavior and also looks unfavorably upon those who switch alliances often or capriciously, which also, again, makes sense.
Yeah, I'm on board. I love this. It's fantastic.
So the Red Knight, like I said, Tempest is very much an ally. In fact, she sees Tempest as a father figure, and the two mm-hmm. spend a great deal of time together, yeah. Usually hunting or exchanging tales in his feasting hall. Mm-hmm. But most often than not, they are busy visiting the numerous fields of battle in Faerun or reviewing the battles of times past. The Red Knight and Torm, the deity Torm, are also similar mm-hmm. in disposition, and their interests in battle and the duties of warriors coincide pretty well.
Okay.
She is known to be fond of him, but whether they are in love or merely close friends is a matter that they have kept very private. Again, I mean, not to say that the lore never dives into the love lives of deities, but I feel like, you know, like there's info there about the Red Knight that uh-huh, hasn't been tapped uh-huh. into almost. Uh-huh. And if you go from, you know, from advanced D&D to advanced D&D second edition to third edition, fourth edition, you know, some of this uh-huh. stuff is sort of left ambiguous so that it can be changed or tweaked in the future.
Right. To kind of future proof it.
Right. And so they're like, oh yeah, her and Torm, they're really close. You know, do they kissy? I don't know. Maybe. And then later on, they're
maybe
like, oh,
they
don't
kiss a little.
They don't like later. They're like, okay, we want to make it to where they don't kiss. So we've established that it was unsure. So I think the Red Knight and Torm would be a pretty good couple though.
Yeah, I could. I think so. I agree. It'd be too much power.
Maybe someone is plotting against them. Maybe someone knows if they get together, they would be the, like, you know, the Forgotten Realms power couple.
The
Bennifer.
They'd have to have a couple name. Yeah, I was going to say, they'd have to have a couple
the
name,
Bennifer,
right?
Or the Brangelina of Forgotten Realms. So stupid.
So dumb.
So, the lady of, okay, so she likes Torm. Sees mm-hmm, Tempest mm-hmm. as a father figure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Someone that the Lady of Strategy does not like is the aforementioned Garagos. From what she's been told of his behavior by Tempest, does not like him, although she has not personally come to blows with him.
Okay.
Instead, her animosity is reserved for Sirik, who she despises the utmost of traitors and liars. And not only that, like he's a traitor, he's a liar, and he's also a poor planner. And that I cannot reconcile.
You cannot abide yeah, the poor planning. Exactly. It's none of the emo-ness. It's just the poor planning.
It's like, oh my gosh, like we were throwing a surprise birthday party for Tempest, and he was in charge of the balloons and the decorations. He didn't have any of it done. So yeah, if you want to learn more about why Sirik is the absolute worst, you can check
really
out the episodes.
My least favorite god.
He was so awful. His awfulness could not be contained within one episode. Mary had to do two episodes on him. Check him out. Episodes 138 and 139. Sirik is awful. He's the absolute
Look, he
worst.
He hauls around a chalice with tears from jilted lovers.
I still have that sound clip.
Somewhere on my hard drive. Yeah, I believe it. It's a keeper for sure.
It might be the bumper at the end of this episode. So after the usual, you know, thank you for listening to the D&D Lorecast. Stick around. You'll hear the Sirik emo song as performed by Mary.
I'll just write out an entire song eventually. We'll see. They'll pop up randomly.
And so during the time of troubles, the Red Knight was active in Tether, defending the strife-torn nation against an army of monsters that threatened to surge forth from the surrounding forests.
Ain't that always the way?
It's always the way. And so it's kind of around this time, around the time of troubles, that and we'll get into it in the second half of the show when we talk about the fellowship, the followers of the Red Knight. This is kind of when she starts to get a lot more power.
Okay.
So by the time that the fourth edition rolls around, which is around 1385 DR, around the time of the spell plague, she's considered an up-and-coming power whose following has grown as warfare and strategy have become more complex.
Okay.
And then in fifth edition, the Red Knight, still considered the goddess, or still the goddess considered, like, I guess so, is definitely still the goddess of planning and strategy. Those who favor her call themselves the Red Fellowship. They believe that wars are won by the best planning, strategy, tactics. You know, that much is still the same throughout the lore.
Very much, yeah. She kept that bit.
And I love, you can see the lore progress through the editions, because the editions coincide with periods in time in the Forgotten Realms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got the Time of Troubles and Advanced D&D days. You've got the Spell Plague from, you know, 3 to 4, and then you've got the Second Sundering from 4 to 5. And so you can kind of see like what's going on in the Forgotten Realms and how it affects the characters, the deities, especially the deities.
Yeah, absolutely. All the powers and stuff at play and things like that, for sure.
The worship of the Red Knight is filled with doctrine about strategy. Like, every war is a series of battles. Losing one doesn't mean losing the war. In war, plan for peace. In peace, plan for war.
I'm here for it.
And I like this one. Seek allies among your enemies' enemies.
Ooh.
It's like, hey, you don't like that guy? I don't like that guy either. We should be friends.
Trauma bonding.
That's exactly what that is. worship of the Red Knight arose among a hero-venerating monastic order of Tempest and Tether shortly after the Time of Troubles, which is what I mentioned before. You know, in Advanced D&D, that was during the Time of Troubles. That's what was going on in the meta plot of the Forgotten Realms. And this was really when the Red Knight started to gain prominence. Like I said, has grown since in popularity because of what her followers call the Great Strategium. For decades, her priests have been traveling to places of warfare to educate both generals and kings in the arts of strategy and battlefield tactics. Okay. Many of these leaders, they then turn them away at first, but it soon became apparent that those who accepted the counsel of the Crimson General's followers gained a distinct benefit. And so then grateful victors built temples to the Lady of Strategy, and gradually her faith spread.
I mean, it's kind of just as expected.
Like, kind of like word of mouth, like grassroots campaign sort of thing. I like it. And then so today, followers of the Red Knight can be found in nearly any land that has seen warfare in the past century. Worshippers of the Red Knight are rare in the general population, but those who revere her can frequently be found among high-ranking commanders of armies, instructors in colleges of war, amongst quartermasters, and as well the authors of tomes of strategy. Each temple to the Red Knight includes an altar dedicated to Tempest. Makes sense. And so such a place is likely to be frequented by both mercenaries and soldiers. A temple to the Red Knight is surrounded by a vast pavilion and a courtyard, which can be rented by companies of soldiers or mercenaries for practice and training. And her priests believe that drilling one's troops in a temple courtyard is a form of propitiation that the Red Knight looks upon with special favor, which makes sense. It's like all this planning, all this, you know, strategy, like you have to be in, you have to be in, be able to pull it out, you know, be able to execute
those
it,
as
right?
Well. Yeah. Like it's the planning part's great, but you need to be able to walk the walk as well.
Got to walk the walk. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Speaking of walking the walk, we're going to walk the walk to the middle of the show. And then we get back, we'll talk about the followers, the holy strategists.
Batman.
Welcome to the middle of the show. Middle of the show is where we do all of our midly housekeeping stuff. So we'll just get right to it. First and foremost, we want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you so much for following us on the social medias, on the on X, on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitch, soon to be streaming very soon. It's very exciting about that. We've been saying that for a while, but streaming, we want to do something. We want to do it right. So we don't want to go in, you know, half cocked and you have a bunch of technical issues. We want to make sure that we get everything at least as right as possible the first time. So thank you for your patience and thank you for listening. A special shout out to all the patrons over at patreon.com/dndlorecast. Thank you for supporting the show in that specific way, because it's thanks to you that we're able to grow the show in ways that wouldn't be possible otherwise. And a super extra shout out to our newest patron, Bob M. Thank you so much for signing up. We hope that you enjoy the stickers that are coming out. And for those who have not received your stickers, they are going in the mail this weekend. They are already signed, sealed, and almost delivered. We hope you appreciate the bonus content as well. If you are interested in that kind of stuff, the sticker pack, the bonus content, free merchandise. I know Darkwing and Tex Tinstar both received their hoodies this past week, their D&D Lorecast hoodie. So if you're interested in that, like I said, patreon.com/dndlorecast. Check out all the different tiers that we have there, all the cool stuff. And if, like I say, if you want to support the show in other ways, social media, the Discord is always on and popping. We're always talking about something on that Discord. It's a lot of fun. Talk, you know, character builds, talk homebrew campaigns, whatever, memes, the memes where we be memeing over on the Discord for sure. So definitely check that out. In terms of D&D news, the revised core rulebooks, the revised edition, I guess, whatever they're calling them, are coming out next year for the 50th anniversary of D&D. For the year of the dragon in terms of the Chinese zodiac, which is, I mean, just so perfect in that way. It's going to be the player's handbook is going to be the biggest player's handbook that D&D has ever had. It's going to have 48 subclasses, you know, four for each of the 12 classes, and each will have different backgrounds. And as far as the monsters manual is concerned, that's going to have over 500 monsters. So like I said, it's going to be bigger, hopefully better than ever. And of course, they're, you know, being designed to be backwards compatible. You can still use all your current 5e stuff as well. And in terms of homebrew shenanigans, since, you know, we are in the holiday season, I was trying to find something holiday, you know, themed, holiday, you know, with the holiday spirit that you could use in your campaign. And I found the Festive Three. From Janelle Lawson, embark on a holiday adventure in the sinister festive realms, a dreamscape mirroring Baldur's Gate, where nightmares manifest in the form of the Festive Three. You've got Krampus Ball, Merkel's Dreidel, and Santa Bane. Players will encounter eerie carolers and twisted toys under the blanket of a perpetual snowstorm. Face progressively challenging encounters against the malevolent trio, unravel mysteries, and fight for joy in this festive-themed journey. So you have 9 new monster stat blocks. You've got some pre-gens in case you just want to jump right into it without having to go through that whole process. 4 battle maps, world map. It's recommended for a party of 3 to 6 players with it being level 10. So it's a chonker. It's a bit of a high-level adventure, not your ordinary like intro entry level stuff, But it looks awesome. It looks like a lot of fun. The artwork looks really cool. Check it out, Festive 3. There's a link in the show notes. $4.99 for the PDF, though. Definitely support your homebrew community. That being said, let's jump back to the show. Welcome back. We are talking the Red Knight, the goddess of strategy and planning, particular, you know, on the battlefield in a war. But, you know, if they can help me, if she can help me figure out how to, you know, work my job.
They say love is a battlefield. Listen to song and everything. So, like, I don't know, maybe she could work across, like, just kind of, you know, I'm just saying.
Who knows how powerful the Red Knight could possibly
That's
become.
That's what I'm saying. It just depends on what kind of a war you're fighting.
Well, if you want to follow the Red Knight, if you want to worship or venerate or exalt, then you would be, Mary, a holy strategist. That is the name by which a cleric of the Red Knight is known.
Okay.
And it is an apt title indeed. By devoting themselves to mastering military tactics and strategy, these militant clerics hone their minds and bodies into the deadliest weapon found in Faerun and beyond. So impressive in their reputation that armies outnumbering their foes 3-1, have been known to surrender upon learning a holy strategist leads the opposing force.
Oh.
That's wild. Like, you tell me.
That is awesome.
Like, I've got 900 guys, and I find out, like, oh, like, we're fighting an army of 300. We're fine. Oh, wait, there's a holy strategist in charge of them? Like, nah, we're good. No.
I ain't that dumb.
I mean, apparently, I mean, I guess you'd have to be dumb to actually go against them.
That's insane.
So the holy strategist's devotion to both discipline and a structured military lifestyle makes them popular with priests of Torm, of Tyr, and clerics of the Red Knights often cooperate with the priests of Valkyr to jointly oversee naval battles. Valkyr is the minor Faerunian god of both sailors and their ships.
Yes.
Most holy strategists harbor a certain distaste for clerics of Garagos, which makes sense, and almost universally despise Cirrusists. Of course, Cirrusist, you know, being the followers of Cyric, we talked in the first half how awful he is. So you can only imagine how awful his followers are.
I just feel like
are.
The only people that don't despise them are them.
Are them. Yeah, right.
And that's only like on an individual basis. They only like themselves, as far as I can remember.
And they despise Garagos because he's a bloodthirsty and single-minded god with a love for violence. And battle frenzy, destroying everything. Definitely not the planning, strategic mind that the Red Knight cultivates.
Pretty much everything she's not.
Right. Holy strategists get along well with most other characters who demonstrate an understanding of, or at least a healthy respect for, the use of tactics. And so as a result, although they are closely allied philosophically, priests of the Red Knight and priests of Tempest, you know, the god of war, sometimes find themselves at odds, you know, because many of the followers of the Lord of Battle, which is an admittedly awesome nickname for a non-evil deity. Like,
that's true.
I mean, we go on and on about how the evil
bad guys
people,
get some solid nicknames,
but the Lord of Battle is pretty awesome.
It's pretty good. I like.
But his followers kind of sometimes disdain planning, preferring to simply rush into battle, which, again, big no-no.
Yeah.
Collectively, the clerics of the Red Knight are referred to as the Red Fellowship. Many members serve as high-ranking commanders in armies throughout Faerun, often personally leading elite special forces units. So they're essentially like the Navy SEALs, like of Faerun.
That's what I was getting here. The same vibe I was.
So I mean, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Guys are basically Secret Service.
Others who are not directly in the employ of the church serve as instructors at military academies or as quartermasters in charge of keeping the troops on the front line fed and supplied. And so, you know, the Red Knight being a very militant goddess, mm-hmm. holy strategists are ranked in a very rigid hierarchy.
Well,
I mean, it makes sense, right? It's almost like a military in and of itself.
Okay.
Some titles used in the Red Fellowship, some of the lowest ones are page and squire. And then you mm-hmm. have a knight, and that kind of like you get different titles with a knight all the way through knight captain and then Lord Knight. And then the highest level you could get is Lord Knight of the Red Standard.
Oh, my.
Fancy. Let me put my pinky up while I drink my Mountain Dew. Paladins who serve the Red Knight are members of the Order of the Red Falcon, who its members count. It's about 50 members or so. So a very elite unit housed in the Citadel of Strategic Militancy, which is northeast of Baldur's Gate. This small order of Red Knight worshippers have a history of triumphing in the age or in the face of overwhelming odds.
Okay.
It trains officers and others in tactics and military history. And its leader at one point was a human named Lady Caitlin Tyndall Bloodhawk.
My gosh. These names are just getting longer and longer.
I mean, like it's the full name. Name is Caitlin Bloodhawk. Full name, Caitlin Tyndall Bloodhawk. Title and full name, Lady Caitlin Tyndall Bloodhawk. So, Lady Caitlin was possessed by the Red Knight's avatar during the Time of Troubles. And so, while possessed, she and her large adventuring band traveled to Tether to repel that aforementioned army of monsters coming from the forest, and earning fame and gratitude of the people there. And although small in number, the knights of this order are master soldiers who have triumphed against overwhelming odds on numerous occasions over and over again.
Right.
The clergy of the Red Knight honor two important holy days. The first of which is the Retreat, which is an annual event held every Midwinter's Day. During this solemn ceremony, the clergy of the Red Knight assemble for a day-long retrospective of the previous year's campaigns. Strategies are discussed, battles are analyzed, and the accumulated lore is integrated into the church's teachings. The second important holy day is the Queen's Gambit, which is celebrated on the first day of Tarsakh. Okay. And during this festival, the clergy of the Red Knights unwind with a day of feasting and gamemanship, day-long tournaments of chess, which I said is like also known as Lance Board, are held with the victors receiving recognition, titles of merit, promotions, sometimes, you know, the usual stuff. But sometimes they even receive a precious gift from the temple armory.
Fancy. How fun.
When there are ceremonial functions, a holy strategist will wear a suit of either half or full plate armor, which is enameled in a blood red hue. And then over this armor, they wear a snow-white tabard that is embroidered with the Red Knight's holy symbol. You know, the chess piece knight with the stars for eyes. And then, I love this, for less formal occasions, holy strategists wear flowing robes of red accented with white. You know, like on laundry day, they're just wearing these flowing robes.
Just chilling at home.
Right. And the shade of red depends on the individual's rank. Which ranges from black to almost black at lower levels to a brilliant crimson at higher ones. Unlike the priests of Tempest, holy strategists are not forbidden to cover their faces with their helms. So they often wear these ornate full face helmets when they wish to convey a grand impression. which was something I always loved in fantasy, either you know, in cinema or TV, just that like the face like from Gladiator, you know, the big guy. I can't remember his name, but he had that awesome helmet.
I don't remember. I've seen it.
Okay, I was gonna say, like, there's no way you haven't seen Gladiator.
I've seen Gladiator. That I've seen. I just don't remember. But I know the vibe you're talking about. And I love it. Any kind of costuming.
Right, exactly.
It's right up my alley.
And additionally, a holy strategist's holy symbol is usually carved from some type of semi-precious red stone. A holy strategist who becomes an adventurer, they're expected to wear the highest quality armor that they can afford, although this regular armor, so to speak, is not usually red enameled. You know, the red enameled one is almost, it's like a ceremonial, almost like costume armor. And the Red Fellowship does not expect its members to keep their armor spotless at all times, but almost all holy strategists do anyway, as a point of pride. And I love this. In the field, a holy strategist is expected to carry a banner or shield marked with an easily recognizable symbol. It's often the holy symbol, the, you know, the chess piece with the stars for eyes. But it could also be something like a coat of arms. And this serves as a rallying point for their allies.
Oh,
this is what I love about it. Despite this requirement, you know, the expected to carry the banner or shield, despite this, holy strategists are not prohibited from removing or concealing their symbols should doing so provide some tactical advantage. It's awesome. Hey, like, you're going to have to carry this so people know who you are. Like, oh, okay, like, but listen, if hiding it means you can win, definitely do that.
Yeah, you must be very, very boastful, you know, make sure everybody knows who we are, unless,
but if you need to win, go ahead. And winning's important. Winning's the most important thing.
If it gets us that W,
we get the dub, hide that.
We need the dub. Yeah.
The most important temple of the Red Knight is the Citadel of Strategic Militancy, which, like I said, is located northeast of Baldur's Gate, about 40 miles northeast of the city. This massive keep was once the home of a minor noble family that served the goddess. And then during the time of troubles, the Red Knight possessed the last scion of that family. You guessed it, Lady Caitlin Bloodhawk, which is a great name. I mean,
it really is a good name.
If you tell me, like, oh, that's the Bloodhawk family, I'm going to be like, oh, let me guess, they're fighters. They fight.
Yeah. What? Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. The Red Knight possessed Caitlin Bloodhawk to serve as her avatar. And although the Citadel was destroyed during that period, it was rebuilt later and now serves as the home of the Red War College, a new but already famous school for military officers. The walls of the Citadel are built of checkered red and white marble, and a massive blood red dome caps the central keep. The chapel is actually an enormous chessboard where the priests play out ritualized human chess games during religious ceremonies.
And I'm getting some very serious Queen of Hearts, but Tim Burton's version of the Queen of Hearts.
Oh, I was thinking the
Bloody Red Queen.
The first Harry Potter movie.
Oh, yeah, that was there too. But I'm getting some... getting some Queen of Hearts vibes, and I love it.
Other temples to the Red Knight are somewhat rare, although more are being built each and every year. Like I said, going from AD&D up through 5th edition, the Red Knight is just becoming more and more prolific and more prominent. Like I said, this specific note is from a 3rd edition source, but like we discussed in the first half, seeing how the popularity has gone up, it should be no surprise that the temples are also being, you know, the temple count is going up. Each temple is dominated by a red and white chessboard floor, which the attendant priests keep polished to a brilliant gleam. And temples to the Red Knight in dangerous lands are often guarded by stone golems built of red or white marble and sculpted to look like enormous chess pieces, which is awesome.
That is so cool.
I mean, imagine like you going up to a tall building and you just see like a giant like bishop piece and you're like, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden it becomes a stone golem and now you have to roll for initiative and you're about to die.
Oh my God, it sounds amazing.
It does sound awesome.
It does sound really cool. It's a cool way to go. I'm just saying. I gotta go.
I mean, I think I might have just come up with an encounter for something at some point. Smaller shrines, however, are common in fortresses and military barracks all across Faerun.
Oh, yeah.
Such a shrine might consist of nothing more than a chess piece or a chess set placed in a special alcove where supplicants can go to pray for the Lady of Strategy's guidance.
Okay, I would pay for that chess set though.
Oh,
one
yeah.
One done and that. Oh.
Like a red and white chess piece? Like
yay.
Chess set?
Oh,
that'd
yeah. Awesome. Like based on this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, thank you so much for listening to us nerd out about lore. We do it just about every week. We do it every day, but we record it at least once a week.
It's only documented once.
Thank you so much for listening. My name is Sergio.
And I'm Mary.
Fare thee well, dear listener, and until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast, or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.